This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to the main topic
in the margin of a book.
Early Morning Riser is a novel about a woman who moves to a small town in Michigan to teach school and ends up falling in love with the local playboy. It's a story about love, it's a story about life, it's a story about responsibility, and it's a story about place, one that has special meaning to author Katherine Heine. I recently spoke with Heine about all of the above. I'm Beth Goulet, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. Can you talk to me a little bit about the location? Because this is set in Boyne City, Michigan. And what are your ties to that location?
Well, I grew up in Midland, Michigan, and my family always went on vacation in the summers and skiing in the winters in northern Michigan. And there's like a whole group of towns, sort of Boyne City and Petoskey and Charlevoix and Harbor Springs. They're all sort of clustered together. And then my husband, we had to move a lot for his job. So when our boys were like 2 and 4, we bought a house, a summer house in Boyne City, so that they would have a more stable base. So we owned that house for 16 years. So Boyne City has a really special place in my heart.
You know, structurally, this novel, it's not broken down necessarily into chapters, but into, you know, more like sections of time. And if I couldn't find my copy, but Standard Deviation also follows the structure too, right?
I think Standard Deviation is more just chapters, but Standard Deviation started out as stories. So yeah, there's a similarity in the structure.
Well, this certainly made, I don't know, had a way of making the story feel real. But I was wondering, how do you tackle like story progression throughout the writing process? I mean, even if it's not on the page, you have to know what happened to Jane between 2002 and 2005, right?
Yeah. And a lot of that I researched, like I really needed to know where Jane was going to go on her honeymoon and how she was going to get there, even though the honeymoon isn't in the book and actually never happens. I felt like I knew these characters so well, and I was so invested in their lives. I feel like I knew what happened. There are no blank spaces in my memory as I look back. But it's knowing it and writing it down, I guess, are two different things.
You mentioned that you know your characters so well. And, you know, in addition to Jane and Duncan, Early Morning Riser had a cast of, you know, I don't know that I'd call them minor characters, but I don't know what else to call them. And, you know, they were just full of quirks. How do you get to know your character so well, so you know what they would say next?
Well, with Aggie, it was really funny because she just sort of showed up in my mind and she said things and I wrote them down. And it's really funny that she's a bossy character because she was sort of a bossy voice in my head right from the start. And there was one line in the book that Aggie says something that wasn't quite grammatical, and every copy editor flagged it. And I was like, but Aggie said that. I heard Aggie say that. And eventually I changed it because I was like, wow, if it's tripping everybody up, it's not working. And then a friend of mine who read like the first chapter, he said that he thought Aggie was always talking about Gary's likes and dislikes as a way to make Gary sound more interesting than he was. And I liked that idea so much that like every time Gary showed up, I had him have some new dislike. Gary was like a gift I gave myself every time I had a reason for him to come over. I was super happy.
Now, I read that the Duncan character, that his character came out of a writing project that had stalled on you. And, you know, as I was reading the book, at times I would think, okay, he's a scoundrel. But then there were times when he just kind of surprises you. So what attracts you to Duncan, and why did he insist on being in one of your books?
Well, the first book that I tried to write that was set in Boyne City was about a brother and sister who hire somebody to get in a car accident with their mother because they want her to stop driving, and they think that'll be a good way. And they hired Duncan, and I couldn't make that novel work, but the fact that Duncan was so laid back and so like willing to do this thing and was sort of always asking funny questions, I just saved him from that. And when I started this other novel, he seemed like the logical choice. I think that I like Duncan. Duncan is redeemed for me by his love for Jimmy and his respect for Jimmy. And also, I think Duncan is actually a really good husband. Like, I think it might be easy to be married to Duncan, despite what everyone thinks of him, because he is so easygoing.
I read a piece that you wrote that appeared in the New York Times Modern Love section. Uh-huh. And in it, you wrote about being part of a blended family and how you sometimes felt like an outsider. And as I read it, I couldn't help but think about Jane throughout this book. And I'm wondering if there are any parallels between you and your main character, or if she takes any cues from you.
I do think that Jane is a lot like me. I hadn't really thought of the blended family thing, but I think that's really perceptive and probably true. I have stepchildren, but they're not that much younger than me. So we did make this kind of odd blended family. Like, I have two friends that I really consider sisters. So like sometimes when I'm talking, I say my sister accidentally. So I do think there's a lot of truth to like, family is who you choose them to be and who you create a life with, rather than straight up blood relatives.
You mentioned the way Duncan, the way he acts with Jimmy and the way he treats Jimmy. But I was thinking, you know, the relationship between Jane and Jimmy was just so poignant. Can you talk to me about their special bond?
Well, I think that I write about people's living arrangements and people living with strangers a lot. I think when I was younger, I wrote about roommates, and then I wrote about marriages, and then I wrote about house guests. And I just think that, you know, agreeing to be seen in your bathrobe by somebody other than your immediate family is like maybe the most difficult thing we do as humans. So I think that Jane feels so responsible for Jimmy. And I think that from the very beginning, just to go back to Duncan, Duncan loves Jimmy. And I think that Jane spends all her time feeling responsible for him or being sorry for him, and just letting herself love him comes kind of late in the book. But I think that throughout the book, she sees ways in which Jimmy adds to her family, even though she doesn't really realize them at the time. I think she's sort of subconsciously aware of them.
You know, Jane, she learns how to be a mother in more ways than one. And, mm-hmm. you know, as you mentioned, and as I had read in some of the pieces, you are a stepmother to your husband's children, and you also have two sons. Now, can you talk about your approach, how you approach the idea of motherhood throughout this book, and maybe who some of your influences were? Because, I mean, I'm talking about Jane, but I'm also thinking about Jane's mother or even Luke's mother, Edith Louise. I mean, did you have any, and I'm not asking you to name names, but did you have any special influences for these mother figures?
Well, it all sort of came about very accidentally, because I was writing this book and figuring out the characters, and I knew that Duncan would have somebody that worked with him in the shop. And since Duncan's business model is so completely lackadaisical, I knew this person wouldn't be like a super go-getter. And so I sort of created Jimmy. And then my husband and I were drinking beer in a bar back when people still did that. And And I was saying that I wanted Jane's mother to be a bad driver, that was, and he said, well, maybe she gets in an accident and kills herself. And I was like, how would that help me? Like, it was so, you know, my poor husband, I was like, that will never work. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, what if maybe she gets in an accident and kills somebody else? And that's how poor Jimmy's mother came into being, was so she could be killed. Is that giving away too much?
No. I don't know. It's up to you.
But my mother is nothing like Jane's mother. My mother is so loving and so warm and gentle. And people are always telling me she's the nicest person they've ever met in their whole lives. And I knew very early on, and it sounds weird to say, like, I knew this when obviously I made it up, but I knew that Jane was going to have two daughters and that they would be very different in temperament. So when it came time for her to have the daughters, my younger son, there's a huge meltdown that Jane's younger daughter has at the beach where they can't get her back in the car. And my son had that at that same beach. That was definitely a true life moment. And we went to Legoland once when my children were very small. And my younger son was, it was Legoland Berlin. And my younger son was the millionth visitor or the half millionth visitor, whatever it was. But like he won this gift bag and a teddy bear, and it was going to be on the German news, and the teddy bear was pink, and he just completely lost it because that was a girl's color. So, which I look back on that and I'm like, well, maybe give out brown bears since it's Legoland, like probably, but oh my God, he got so upset. I had to give the bear to some other girl in the cafeteria. He wouldn't even let us take it home. So there were lots of children's stories from real life. But I also think that parenting, especially parenting of young children, it's just the most intense experience. It would be hard, I think, for me not to write about it.
For listeners of Marginalia, if you listen to the podcast and you make it to the credits, you'll hear the name Haley Krausen as one of our producers. And she's wicked smart and she's able to read so much faster than I can. And when she was submitting her questions to me, she mentioned after reading Early Morning Riser that she had like several laugh out loud moments. She mentioned that, you know, the way her 27-year-old brain looked at the dynamics of a romantic relationship. And when I was reflecting back on reading it, I remembered, you know, tearing up several times, and I was less interested in the relationship between Jane and Duncan as I was like Jane and Jimmy. Now, I'm almost twice her age, and so clearly the book has wide appeal, but it also made me wonder about your audience. Do you have a reader in mind when you write?
If I do, it's probably my husband, because he reads everything first, and he never reads fiction. So he thinks that my fiction is the best fiction he's ever read in his whole life, and it might actually be because it's the only fiction. So I'm always thinking, like, will Ian think this is funny? Will he understand what I'm trying to say? I think because he's not a writer, he's so generous about, like, if I'm stuck, if I need ideas, he just like reels off a whole bunch of ideas, and he doesn't mind if I use them or I don't use them. He's wonderful. And I guess I don't think so much about a demographic of people who are going to be interested. I think I'm writing more to please myself and writing about the things that I'm interested in. I mean, there are so many reasons not to write that I think if I started thinking about appealing to a certain demographic, that would be one more reason not to write.
I think what I loved about this book is that it shows that, you know, sometimes plans do not come together. But does that mean you failed, or do you just make new plans? And when do you decide that you're happy enough? Can you talk to me a little bit about that? I mean, maybe my look at the book wasn't exactly what you had in mind, but I just remember coming to the end of the first chapter, and at first I was thinking, this is just a light book. But then you get to the end of that first section and you're like, okay, no, this is not going at all where I thought it was going to go. And every single chapter had a little bit of a twist.
Well, there's a TED Talk, and I can't remember who it's by, but it's about how video games are actually like preparing you or teaching you a life lesson, because in a video game, to get to the next level or the ultimate level, you have to like jump over rivers and scale fences and slay enemies. And it's a very jagged graph of how you rise. Because if a video game was just like so easy that you just rose through the levels with no challenges, nobody would play it. And that's how sort of life is, that the graph of your life has lots of zigs and zags, because that's the way life moves. So a big part of the novel for me was definitely that I feel like Jane doesn't end up with the life that she maybe pictured, but she ends up with something better.
I'm always fascinated by book titles. You know, the subject of being an early morning riser doesn't show up until like near the end of the novel, if I'm remembering right.
Mm-hmm.
Is there special meaning behind the title? And also, who determines the title in the publishing industry?
We work together. I mean, certainly everybody has to like it. It would be a big thing to disagree on. There's a lot of folk songs in the book, and one of the folk songs that I really wanted to use was Early Morning Riser. And I was going to use it right at the point where Jane and Jimmy are sitting on the porch and it's early in the morning. And I couldn't think of any way for a song to be playing without it being really contrived. So I had to leave that song out. But I really like that moment because Jane is just happy. She's just content with her life. And she also has this half-hearted thought that like she should get up this early every day because the world is so pretty. And even as she thinks it, she knows she's not going to do it, which I do all the time. So that moment in the book is a really important one for me. And when it came to Early Morning Riser, the song is important. Even though I wound up not using it in the text, I wanted to preserve it as the title.
Okay, now I have a couple of personal questions for you.
Okay.
You mentioned that you had to move around a lot for your husband's work. Is he a spy?
He is. He's a former spy.
I love that. Okay. And then I also understand when I made arrangements for this interview and I was visiting with Emily, who is your publicist, you went to KU? Did she tell me that?
Yeah.
Talk to me about that. When was this?
Oh, it was an embarrassingly long time ago. I went there from 1985 to 1989. My dad grew up, well, he was born in Colorado, but he grew up in Kansas. And my grandparents lived in Goodland, if you know where that is.
Yes, I do.
And my dad really wanted me to go to KU. And because teenagers make like the weirdest decisions in the world, I was like, okay, that sounds good. Like, we never went and visited it or anything. And then I went there and I just loved it. It was the four most wonderful years. KU is a wonderful school and Kansas is a really beautiful place. But I actually have a very funny story about KU and writing,
okay,
which was about 6 months ago. I was on Facebook and, you know, you see like people you may know and there's just like a little thumbnail picture. And one of those people, I was like, oh my God, I was in an elevator drunk at a party with this guy. And I told him he had really great handwriting. And because I think I sat behind him in another class, so I saw his handwriting. And I think he was just like scared to death of like this weird girl in an elevator. But so I friended him on Facebook, and that was him. I mean, he went to KU. He has great handwriting. He went to parties in that dorm. But he's also like a really good poet. He has this great book coming out in June called Worldly Things. And so I feel like KU is still enriching my life by giving me flashbacks, you know, like I'm sure I was drinking a fuzzy navel, which gives me, you know, PTSD to even talk about. But that really pleased me.
Okay, so now I've reached the end of my formal written questions, and we've talked about a lot, but I didn't do a deep dive necessarily into the book. Are there any areas that you want to talk about or any, you know, questions that you want to answer that I didn't ask?
I guess I do have one thing to add. In writing Jimmy's character, that even though he has an intellectual disability, that it was really important to me that he be kind and honorable and insightful and worthy of love, that he was an actual character, a complex man, and not just a problem for Jane to fix. That was very important to me.
That was Katherine Heine, author of the novel Early Morning Riser, which was published by Knopf. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. And this episode was produced by Haley Krausen and me. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.